Okay, so you've all sent us a ton of stuff about risk management and insurance for property owners. And, to be honest, it can be a bit much, right? I mean, it feels like sometimes they just bury you in paperwork and it's hard to even know where to start. So, what we're going to try to do today is pull out the most important stuff, the things that are really going to make a difference for you in terms of how you think about protecting what you own.
Yeah, no, I agree. You can definitely get lost in the weeds, you know.
Right.
We're going to cut straight to the chase. The fundamentals of risk management and why, as a property owner, you absolutely have to have insurance. And the stuff you sent covers it all, you know. Identifying those potential problems, putting safety measures into place, and figuring out what to do when something unexpected happens. We're aiming to make you feel totally in control and ready for anything.
So let's jump in. Okay. The first thing that stood out to me in all this material is that there's actually a very systematic way to approach risk. It starts with something that might seem obvious, but it's really crucial, figuring out what could go wrong.
Right, yeah, risk identification, that's the first step. And it's about really opening your eyes to all the possibilities. You know, your sources are right on the money when they say it's not just about those big dramatic things. You know, the earthquakes, the floods, the fires, although those are obviously important to think about, but it's also about those less obvious things. You know, like economic downturns impacting your tenants, legal issues, the day-to-day stuff that could lead to, you know, operational failures. Tech issues if you're doing things digitally. And of course, you know, security breaches. That's always a concern.
Okay, so it's not just about like bracing for the huge disaster. It's about being aware of all those little things that could turn into headaches down the road, right? So once you've got this list, like where do you go from there? Because just looking at a list of everything that could possibly go wrong, I mean, that's pretty overwhelming.
Oh, yeah, totally. But that's where risk assessment comes in, right? The next step, and this is where you start to make sense of all of it. You look at each risk through two lenses, right? Likelihood, how likely is it to happen? And impact, what are the consequences going to be if it does happen? The material you sent talks about both qualitative and quantitative assessments. So qualitative is like, you know, high, medium, low. And then quantitative is like actually trying to put a dollar figure on that potential loss.
Okay, so it's not just like, a burst pipe is bad. It's like, how likely is a pipe to burst in my property? And if it does, what's the financial damage going to look like? Because a little leak is a very different beast than like a major water main break.
Exactly. And this whole idea of prioritization, that's huge for you as a property owner, right? You can't realistically, you know, devote equal time and resources to every single possible risk. The assessment helps you focus on the stuff that could really have a major impact. You know, if you're in an area with no history of earthquakes, but your property is in a low-lying zone, well, maybe flood preparedness is where you need to really focus your energy.
Okay, so we've figured out what the risks are and which ones are the scariest. What do we actually do about them? What do we do? The stuff we've got here talks about risk treatment. That sounds very therapeutic, but I'm guessing it's a bit more action-oriented than that.
It is definitely more about taking action. Risk treatment or mitigation is about choosing how to handle each risk. You know, the sources you sent, they outline four main strategies. First one, risk avoidance. That's just deciding not to do the thing that creates the risk in the first place.
Seems pretty straightforward. I mean, if you're worried about the liability of having a trampoline on your rental property, the simplest solution is probably just don't have a trampoline.
Exactly. Now, the second one, risk reduction. That's probably where you're going to spend a lot of your time and effort. This is about taking steps to reduce, you know, either how likely it is that a risk will happen or how bad it'll be if it does. And your sources, they give some great examples. You know, implementing strong safety protocols, improving procedures so you minimize errors, diversifying your tenant base. Like, think about installing a really good security system. That's reducing the likelihood of a break-in.
So things like regular safety inspections, smoke detectors, upgrading old wiring, all that would fall into risk reduction.
Absolutely. Then we have risk transfer. This is where insurance becomes super important. It's about shifting that financial burden of a potential loss to somebody else, like an insurance company. And your sources, they also mention contracts with indemnification clauses as another way to transfer risk.
Okay, so you pay your premiums, and in return, if something bad happens, they help you cover the financial fallout. That's the deal, right? And what about the fourth option, risk acceptance? That sounds a little like just, crossing your fingers and hoping for the best.
Yeah, it can seem that way, but it's actually a deliberate decision. It's acknowledging the risk is there, but deciding that the impact is small enough, or it's unlikely enough to happen that it's not worth the cost and effort to try to avoid it, reduce it, or transfer it. Like maybe a minor cosmetic issue. You just accept that as part of owning property. You know, you don't need a special insurance policy for every little scratch.
Okay, I see. Sometimes the cost of preventing a tiny risk is bigger than the potential problem itself, right? Now, the last step in this whole cycle is monitoring and review. This isn't something you just do once and forget about it, right?
Definitely not. You know, the world's constantly changing. New risks pop up all the time. I mean, think about cybersecurity. There's a whole new world of risks, right? And then the things you're doing to manage the risks you already know about, they might not be as effective as time goes on. That's why your sources are so adamant that risk management is a continuous loop. You got to monitor for new risks, reassess the ones you already know about, see if your strategies are still working. You know, that constant vigilance, that's what's going to keep you safe in the long run.
Right. Okay, so that's the basic framework for managing risk. Now let's really zero in on insurance. You know, the material calls it a vital risk transfer tool. But can you kind of break down how it actually works?
Sure. Basically, insurance works on this principle of risk pooling. So a bunch of people, you know, they all pay premiums into this big pot. And that money is used to cover the losses of the people who actually experience a covered event. It's a way of sharing the burden, right? Mm-hmm. So that if something bad happens, it's not financially devastating for the individual.
So my premium, along with everybody else's, is going to help someone who might have a fire or, you know, some other major problem. And hopefully if something happens to me, that same pool will be there for me. It's like a community of risk.
That's a great way to put it. And the goal of insurance really is indemnification. It's about getting you back to where you were financially before the loss happened. Now, obviously, this depends on your policy, you know, your coverage limits, your deductible. But the idea is if you have a covered event that costs, say, $10,000 to fix, insurance should provide you with that $10,000 minus your deductible to get you back to square one.
So it's not about like profiting from a misfortune. It's about getting back on your feet. And the policy itself, that's an important document, right? More than just proof that you paid.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a legal contract. It tells you exactly what's covered, what's not covered, what you're responsible for, what the insurance company is responsible for. And it spells out under what conditions they'll actually pay a claim. You got to read that policy carefully. Don't just stick it in a drawer.
Okay, homework assignment for all the property owners out there, right? Read your policies. Now, the material we've got, it really emphasizes that there are different kinds of insurance for different kinds of risks. And it goes pretty deep into liability coverage, which seems especially important for property owners. Why is that such a big deal?
It's a huge deal because liability coverage protects you from those potentially massive financial losses that can happen if you're found legally responsible for hurting someone or damaging someone's property. Without enough liability coverage, a lawsuit, even if you win, can cost you a fortune in legal fees. And if you lose, well, those payouts can be absolutely devastating.
Okay, so what are the key types of liability insurance that property owners really need to have on their radar?
Well, first, you've got general liability insurance. That's like your foundation. It can protect you if somebody gets hurt on your property, like a slip and fall, or if their property gets damaged because of something you did or didn't do. It covers things like medical bills for the injured person, your legal defense if they sue you, and any settlements or judgments you have to pay.
So if someone's visiting my rental property and trips on a broken step that I haven't fixed and they get hurt, general liability could help cover their medical bills and a potential lawsuit.
Exactly. Then there's professional liability insurance, sometimes called errors and omissions or E&O insurance. This one's mainly for people who provide professional services or advice. It protects them if a client loses money because of a mistake they made, you know, some error or omission in their work. Not every property owner needs this, but if you're doing property management or consulting, it's definitely something to think about.
Got it. What about directors and officers' liability? That sounds more like something for big corporations.
Yeah, it's usually associated with corporations. D&O insurance protects the personal assets of a company's directors and officers if they get sued for something they did as leaders of the company. So if your property is owned by a corporation, this coverage can be a really important layer of protection for the people making the decisions.
Okay, that makes sense. The material also mentions commercial auto liability, which is for vehicles used for business, obviously. And then there's workers' comp.
Right, workers' compensation. That covers medical expenses and lost wages for employees who get hurt on the job, regardless of whose fault it was. Mm-hmm. In most places, if you have employees, you're legally required to have this. And in exchange for that coverage, employees usually can't sue you for work-related injuries.
Then there's this umbrella or excess liability insurance. Is that basically extra coverage on top of your other policies?
It is. It sits on top of your other liability policies, like general liability or auto liability. It's there for those really big losses, the ones that exceed the limits of your other policies. It can be a lifesaver, literally. Imagine a multi-car accident involving a company vehicle. Those damages could easily go over the limit of a standard auto policy.
Yeah, I can see how that would be important. And for a property owner specifically, there's landlord liability insurance. How's that different from the regular general liability?
Landlord liability is tailored to people who rent out their properties. It covers you if someone gets hurt on your property because you were negligent as a landlord. Things like not maintaining common areas safely, not fixing known hazards, inadequate security that leads to someone getting hurt. It can overlap with general liability, but it often has specific clauses and exclusions that relate to the landlord-tenant relationship.
So it's specialized for that specific situation. Makes sense. The material also talks about property insurance, which is for damage to the actual property from things like fire and wind. And it makes a point of saying that flood insurance is usually a separate policy. Why is that so important for people to understand?
It's super important because most property insurance policies, whether it's for a commercial building, a house, or even renter's insurance, they don't cover flood damage. If there's even a slight chance of flooding where your property is, you need a separate flood insurance policy. And if you're in a high-risk flood zone, your mortgage lender will probably require it. You can't assume your regular policy will cover it.
So don't just assume that you're covered for floods. Got it. That's a really good point. With all these different types of coverage, how do you even begin to figure out what you need?
It all comes down to knowing the specific risks for your property. What kind of property is it? Where is it located? What are the natural disaster risks in that area? Who's using the property and how? How much is it worth? It's best to talk to an insurance pro, someone who can do a proper risk assessment for you and help you pick the right coverage for your situation and your budget.
All right, let's switch gears a little bit. The material also talks a lot about safety and security measures. This is like the preventative medicine of risk management, right? Trying to stop things from happening in the first place.
Exactly. Putting money into good safety and security measures, that's all about reducing the chances of bad things happening. And if something does happen, making sure it's not as bad as it could have been. For property owners, this is about protecting your tenants, protecting your investment, and protecting yourself from liability. A well-maintained, secure property is a less risky property.
So, what are some of the key things that they emphasize in the stuff you read?
Well, good lighting, that's a basic one. Well-lit common areas can deter crime, and they make it less likely that someone's going to trip and fall, especially at night. But it's not just about having lights. You got to maintain them too, make sure they're working. And then exit signs, clear ones and emergency procedures that everybody knows, those are absolutely vital. If there's a fire or some other emergency, you got to be able to get everyone out safely. And then fire safety systems, smoke detectors, alarms, sprinklers if you have them, fire extinguishers. That stuff's not just important, it's often the law. And you need to have those systems inspected regularly.
Makes sense. What about more, security specific things? What should people be thinking about?
Yeah, so the sources, they talk about a few options, and the best choices are going to depend on your property. Security cameras or CCTV, those could be a big deterrent, and they provide evidence if something does happen. Access control systems like key cards, fobs, even biometric scanners, those can make sure only authorized people can get in. And alarm systems, those are great for alerting the authorities if there's a break-in, a fire, or something else going on.
It's not all high tech, though, right? I mean, just good old-fashioned maintenance seems to be really important.
Absolutely. Regular maintenance and inspections, that's crucial. You got to catch those little things before they become big problems. Uneven walkways, loose handrails, electrical problems. Fixing those seemingly minor issues can prevent accidents, reduce your liability, and just make the property safer overall. The sources also talk about communicating with your tenants. Let them know about safety procedures, encourage them to report anything suspicious or any maintenance issues they see. When everyone works together, the property's safer for everybody.
Right, everybody's got to be on board with safety. Okay, the material also mentions things like having security guards and visitor management systems.
Yeah, those can be necessary, depending on the property. Security guards, they're a visible deterrent. They can respond to incidents right away and enforce the rules. Visitor management systems help you keep track of who's coming and going, which is important for security and in case of an emergency. Investing in all these safety and security measures, it makes things safer for everyone. And it could even lower your insurance premiums because you're showing that you're taking risk reduction seriously.
Now, even if you do everything right, sometimes stuff just happens. That's where emergency preparedness comes in. Why is it so important to have a plan?
Because when an emergency happens, you know, like a big storm, a power outage, some kind of major property damage, having a plan lets you respond quickly and effectively. It's about minimizing the harm, you know, to people and to property and making the recovery process a lot smoother. It's about being ready for those what ifs so that when the stress is high, you know what to do.
Okay, so what should a good emergency preparedness plan include?
It starts with figuring out what kinds of emergencies are most likely to happen where your property is, right? Then you need to have all your emergency contact information up to date and easy to find. You know, your tenants, your staff, emergency services, utility companies, your insurance people, and you need a way to communicate with everyone during an emergency. Phone trees, email, text messages, a designated meeting spot, whatever works.
And evacuation plans are a big part of it, I imagine.
Oh, huge. Clearly marked escape routes, a safe place for people to gather outside the building. And you got to practice those evacuations, make sure everybody knows what to do. But the plan also needs to cover what to do if it's not safe to evacuate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, designated safe areas inside, instructions on how to secure those areas.
And having supplies, that's got to be pretty basic, right?
Absolutely. You need emergency kits that are easy to get to. First aid supplies, flashlights, extra batteries, water, food that won't spoil, blankets, a battery-powered radio, or something else so you can get information. You also need to know how to shut off the utilities. You know, gas, electricity, water, in case you need to. And you need a clear chain of command. You know, who's responsible for what during different kinds of emergencies.
What about after the emergency? The plan should cover that too, right?
Yeah, you need procedures for after the emergency's over. How to assess the damage, how to report it to your insurance company, how to communicate with your tenants about what's happening and what's next, how to start the recovery process. And the plan has to be a living document, you know?
Yeah.
It has to change as things change. You need to train your staff and your tenants, make sure they know the plan and what their role is. And you got to review and update the plan regularly.
Yeah.
You know, as the property changes, as you get new tenants, as the risks change.
So a good emergency plan isn't just something you write up and forget about. It's an ongoing process that can actually help protect people and property and potentially even reduce your liability.
Exactly. It's just part of being a responsible property owner.
So we've covered a lot today. You know, we've talked about identifying the risks, assessing them, figuring out how to handle them, and then constantly monitoring and reviewing your strategies. We've talked about the importance of insurance, especially liability coverage, and we've talked about being proactive with safety and security measures and having a solid emergency plan.
It's all connected,
yeah.
You know, protecting your property and the people who use it. It's not a one-time thing. It's an ongoing process. It's not just about protecting your investment. It's about protecting people.
So think about everything we've talked about today. You know, think about those potential hazards around your property. Think about landlord liability insurance. Think about what goes into a good emergency plan. And ask yourself, what's one thing that I need to focus on right now? What's one thing that I can do to make my property safer? And if you have more questions about the stuff we talked about today, that material you sent did mention a contact email, digital@mmproperties.info, just so you have that. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.